Hi, and welcome to the Drama Club. First of all, justice for George Floyd. On this week's episode, we talk Kelly Ripa, Lana Del Rey, Doja Cat, Lori Loughlin, and Joe Biden. And Steph's got the story of the most beautiful girl in the world, Elizabeth Taylor. All this drama and more on this week's Drama Club.
What up, fam? What up, fam? It's good, y'all. Feels good, right? Yeah, I know it, dude. And without further ado, we broadcasting live from CA to M.
I remember that your mom one time was like you went upstairs or something and you were like, Stephanie's here. And she was like, I know, I can hear her. So I'm always like, oh, I don't want to be that loud.
So welcome, everyone.
This is a coronavirus episode of the Drama Club once again.
Yeah, but we're, plot twist, we're in the same place.
Uh-oh.
6 feet apart.
We're 6 feet apart. It's killing me.
Minimum.
Literally, the 6 feet is killing me.
You know what's killing me? This always happens, like, when we record after we hang out. There are things that I'm going to say when we're hanging out. And I'm like, oh, wait.
Yeah, that does bother me because I wanted to talk to you about all the stuff I was saving to talk to you about this, and we're like hiking and I was like, ugh.
So we went for a hike today. We were working on our fitness.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Like a 4 mile hike. I was proud of us.
Yeah. And it was really, it's such like a beautiful day.
Mm-hmm.
It's Saturday.
Mm-hmm. This is Los Angeles, California, Saturday. You could be like a DJ. Traffic is heavy on PCH. Everybody keep their distance and wear your masks.
And the next one goes out to Ray Ray. What's up, guys?
Welcome. Lots of stuff happening this week.
Yeah.
I wanted to tell you this little thing because Kelly Ripa just announced that, like, she's been having interviews and stuff.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, she's one of those, she's out there.
Yeah, yeah.
So this week she was like talking about the quarantine and like she's been discussing the quarantine with her kids and everything with the media. Mm-hmm. And then this week she was like, yeah, also we're in the Caribbean.
What? How did she get out there? Oh, you know, like, she got jets.
Like they were there. And then, like, everything started going down and they just decided to stay out there.
What?
So for the last, like, 2.5 months, she's been in the Caribbean with Mark Consuelos.
Talk about, that is a good-looking man.
That is a sexy couple.
Aging like a fine wine. What do their kids look like?
I don't know.
They probably look regular.
I'm sure they look great, though.
No, I bet they look regular.
Really?
Yeah, I'm assuming.
He's fine.
Yeah,
he wasn't fine. The dad in this show I just watched on Netflix, Never Have I Ever.
Oh, yeah. I kind of
not
don't,
the dad, but a dad.
That show has fantastic reviews, but I kind of don't want to watch it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, and I love Mindy.
Mm-hmm.
It's just it's for children, right?
Yeah, it's for like teenagers.
Yeah,
it's cute. You should watch
it. But see, last time I got burned because I tried to watch 13 Reasons Why.
Oh, that was not
coming. And I did watch the whole season, and it was somewhat captivating.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, at the end, I was like, this was for children.
Yeah. Like I don't need to keep going.
Right.
If you could get through that, you will definitely like Never Have I Ever.
Okay.
Yeah, she's really funny, the main girl.
Well, you gotta watch Pen 15.
Oh yeah, I want to watch that.
It's for adults.
Oh, interesting.
That's why you're like, Mateo watches it. I was like, yeah.
How many seasons are there?
One.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think they're like half an hour, and it's girls that are our age playing the like 13-year-old versions of themselves.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
And oh God, I would not want to be myself at 13 again.
And everybody else is like the actual age, the correct age. And okay. It's like goes, I mean, you remember every, it's like,
yeah, it's, I was horrible back then. Yeah, that was the only thing that happened with them. But it was just like out of nowhere. Like she'd been talking about the damn quarantine. She just like happened to omit the fact that she's in the Caribbean.
I know she was in the news for like maybe it's been a while, over a month ago, because she was struggling with like
her kids.
Yeah,
right.
She was like, I'm not speaking to some of them or
something. And like she like somebody refused a hug or some shit. I don't know, you know how parents are.
Yeah especially like white parents.
Yeah, you know, Mark was like, let it go. Let them not hug us.
He played there was this show that I watched like a couple of episodes on, and it was him and Mark Paul Gosselaar. Ooh. Shout out Zach Morris.
Zach Morris, that's my number one bae right there.
And it was like
him and Guy Fieri, my bad.
And it was about this, it was on Fox, which I should have known because it was a show on fucking Fox, but it was about, I was just curious about the premise. It was about this, the first girl to pitch in the major leagues.
Oh, cool.
I think it was called Pitch.
Okay.
Anyway, it was kind of like, the girl was the pitcher and then Zach Morris was the catcher.
Ooh.
And, you know, he was playing a baseball player, so he was looking good.
Ooh.
And then Mark Consuelos was like the, either like the owner or some shit of the team. So he was like in suits.
Mark Consuelos was Sammy Sosa. Papi, a big papi.
No, Sammy Sosa would have to be played by a white man now.
Oh, true. Now, yeah.
Or a pink man.
What?
Because he looks like Pepto Bismol.
As played by this salmon.
Sammy Sosa as played by this bottle of Pepto Bismol.
Anyways. Okay, the biggest thing this week was Lana Del Rey, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh, okay, hold on. Let me read it.
Yeah, you got to get into it.
I clicked on the Dori Buka de Beppo.
Yeah. How about that? Dori from Real Housewives of Beverly Hills rented out the fucking
the dining room
of a Buka de Beppo. That's how poor Dorit and PK really are, guys. Is Buka de Beppo a... what's it called?
A chain or a franchise?
A franchise?
I don't think it's a franchise, but it is a chain.
Okay, I know it's a chain, but mm-hmm. So that guy just happened to own a grip of them, one of her friends?
Or all of them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And so he rented out the dining room to
her?
He
was like, you can do whatever you want with this dining room.
So she turned it into like what she imagines like the
Napoli Tuscan
coast in Italy to look like. She had hella lemon trees and stripes in there. What's that famous Italian restaurant in Vegas?
Olive Garden.
No. That's the one in my heart for sure.
In Vegas
there's this old school one where like all the guys used to go, like the Rat Pack used to go to after their shows and shit.
Oh, what is the one that we ate at that one time? Carbone.
Oh yeah, no, that's a nice one, right? I'm talking about like a family ass one, but they got an old Italian dude with like a what is this called?
An accordion
yeah. Walking around.
I fuck with those, like those red sauce places.
Well, that's exactly what it is. Like yeah. You sit down and they're like, and you get like a bottle
of wine.
House wine.
Yeah, like I like immediately. Those places.
And it's like red or white, and then like everything is like, okay, you get like pasta with like chicken parmesan or pasta with eggplant.
And whatever. Someone comes up to you and they say, "You asked this of me at my daughter's wedding."
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so this is Lana Del Rey. For some unknown reason, in I want to say the middle of the night, West Coast time, because you know she's out on the West Coast.
Right.
She posted this question for the culture. I already have first book. Pause on my Zach
what
Morris
culture?
Shit. Freeze.
What culture, mate? This fucking 1950s wannabe ass white bitch. Question for fucking Joan Draper.
Okay,
Betty Draper.
Now that Doja Cat, Ariana, Camilla, Cardi B, Kehlani, and Nicki Minaj, and Beyonce have had number ones with songs about being sexy, wearing no clothes, fucking, cheating, etc. Pause. Kehlani has not had a number one.
Was Havana a number one for Camilla?
I think it was.
I think it was. That thing was dominating the charts.
Yeah, it might have been. Okay, but all right.
Also, like, shout out to... those three girls who were like hella hyped to be included in this list.
Oh, like
Ariana,
Doja
Camilla.
Cat. Oh, no. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Ariana, Camilla, and Kehlani.
Okay. So she said, can I please go back to singing about being embodied, feeling beautiful by being in love, even if the relationship is not perfect, or dancing for money or whatever I want without being crucified, or saying that I'm glamorizing abuse? Question mark, question mark, question mark, question mark, question mark.
We don't got to get into the rest of that.
Okay.
But like at one point she says there has to be a place in feminism for a person like me who looks like me or something, right?
Yeah, for a person like me.
And then obviously everybody
who look and act like me is what she said.
Yeah, who look and act like me. Like there you are.
That is the main, that's feminism. Yeah, that's main right there. The rest of us have to fight.
You
for.
Are who what everybody everything is made for girls who look and yeah. act like you. Yeah. What the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah. So ridiculous. I can't believe this is such an unforced error. Why? Why would she? And then this is in the shadow. We talked about this, what, last week of the Alison Roman, Chrissy Teigen thing.
Right. So like as a white woman. And then because so obviously almost everybody she called out on that. Everybody she called out on that list is a person of color except for Ariana. And she yeah. damn well tries to be.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
So you can't do that. Like, why, as mm-hmm. a white person, mm-hmm. do you feel okay to say that about all these women of color?
Right, right.
Like, why?
Yeah, because she needs to make herself, she needs to point at them and say, like, why can they do that, but I can't do, like, it, she's making herself the victim.
But also, she acts as though all of those women get away with it. Like, they right. all are yeah. heavily criticized by a bunch of people.
Even remember Shakira and J-Lo at the Super Bowl.
Come on.
You know?
With like the lightest amount of twerking.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not like, so her argument is invalid from the jump it's because moot. Of that.
Yeah. yeah. It's stupid.
But if she wanted to say there's a double standard about what men can talk about in their music and what women can talk about, that, okay, that we can have that conversation.
Right. But what she chose to say instead, which has no merit whatsoever, just shows like the fucking tunnel vision that she has.
Yeah.
And that's exactly why it is about race.
Right.
Because you're so wrong about everything else that mm-hmm. obviously you're not a person that's taking that into consideration.
And she doesn't see it. She's
so privileged.
You know, she's the good person who would say like,
oh, I don't see color.
I don't. Yes.
A fucking colorblind right. ass shit. Don't even get me started on that shit. After Beyonce did the Super Bowl with Bruno Mars and Coldplay, she got lynch threats.
Oh, yeah. That's
because
right.
she was talking about police brutality.
Right.
People like hated that she came out in her Black Panther outfits.
Yeah.
And that was fucking awful. Ariana got death threats after Mac Miller killed himself for mm-hmm. some fucking reason, mm-hmm. as if she has something to do with that.
Echoes of Courtney Love.
Yeah. Right? Everybody that she mentioned has gone through hell.
Yeah.
And they just keep their fucking mouth shut and keep going.
Right.
They don't keep their mouth shut. They just keep going in the midst of like all but that
they're not someone who would
her.
They're not someone who would like point to someone else and be like, how come they have to do, or like, how come they're allowed to do this and I'm not allowed to do it? Not a single person on that list would ever say that.
No.
Ever.
And there is some backlash with Doja Cat.
I know.
Which I haven't read exactly what happened, but I saw that like some tweets surfaced where uh-huh. she defends, I think, her, like, a KKK boyfriend or something?
She used to be on Tiny Chat, which is, like, some, like, chat platform where you could enter, like, chat rooms with people.
Okay.
And she used to do, like, some fucked up shit on there. And I guess there's footage of her saying that she wanted to be called, she wanted, like, she used to do, like, some cam girl shit on it, too. So she said that she wanted to be called like a white man's N-word.
Okay. So somebody uploaded videos which show the Say So singer socializing with people who make racist comments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just kind of like, okay, taking it.
And I heard something, it's unverified, I think, I'm not sure, like she has a song that references Sandra Bland.
Ooh.
Rest in peace. Something about like a... just kind of saying like, oh, she was doing like criminal shit, you know, like there's a racist term online that didn't do nothing. This is like the right, first right, time right, I'm right. hearing it, but it's like it's very racist, and it's in reference to like how when these mostly Black people are killed, they didn't do nothing,
right,
in quotes, you know. So it's like the most horrific, ridiculous shit, and I guess that she has a song called that.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay, so Doja Cat's out.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll take that L.
Right. You know who had a fantastic response to this? Megan Fox.
Oh, interesting.
Listen to this.
I gotta tell you, time and time again, I like Megan Fox.
Yes, same.
I'm always like, dude, it's true. She's not all up in
right.
the Hollywood shit. And she mm-hmm. was like so fucking hot. She yeah. could have been out there yeah. like hella.
For sure.
Paparazzi yeah. ass shit. She could have been on her Kardashian shit if she wanted to.
for sure. She could have done whatever the fuck she wanted. Anyway, this is what she said. It's in a notes app, by the way.
Ooh.
She said, "There is never a need to compare yourself to other women."
That, okay, period. Yeah. Period.
She said, "I know the struggle of being a woman in this industry. I know the feeling of being constantly scrutinized and degraded, but I would never invalidate the struggles other women have faced in order to give voice to mine."
Ooh.
"Especially when those women have most likely faced worse."
Yes.
"I'm on your side, but please accept that your struggle is not a singular one."
Wow. Perfect.
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 Yep.
Megan Fox coming
for
through.
We'll
forgive you for macking on Machine Gun Kelly.
What is that? Did you watch the video?
No, but I heard it's hot. But I don't consider him hot. Yeah, I consider her hot. But
yeah, she's super hot.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So then Lana had to respond. And she said, "And my last and final note on everything.
Oh.
When I said people who look like me, I meant the people who don't look strong or necessarily smart or like they're in control, etc. It's about advocating for a more delicate personality, not for white women." Oh. "Thanks for the Karen comments, though. Very helpful."
I hate the comparison of like delicate, because people...
That's racist.
Exactly. People correlate like whiteness to delicate, pure, you know, angelic and shit.
Yeah.
And blackness to like tough, mm-hmm. rough, or whatever the fuck.
And there's that trope of like the black woman since like...
forever!
Gone with the Wind. You know, the mammy is like this tough woman.
Right.
Who's like not allowed to do anything but be stoic.
Exactly.
So, and she's perpetuating that same shit.
Yeah. That's bullshit. It's such bullshit. Beyonce's delicate as shit, by the way. Lana, ooh, you had 3 bops in 2011.
And then you dated a cop.
And then, yeah, and then you like low-key were all up in the mix with James Franco.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't think we need you. Goodbye.
Let me tell you something. When she came out, I've been saying this since the day she came out, since the first time I saw her. I want to like her so bad because there's something about like that aesthetic and that vibe that I like, I enjoy, but never really.
Oh, I do like her first album a lot.
I mean, I like it too, but like it's not.
Oh, yeah, but you're not really, like super into it. No,
right.
Me
it
either,
never really reaches the heights where I feel like this is.
Like she's not on heavy rotation.
Like if someone created an artist for me to like, it would have all the pieces of Lana Del Rey, but for some reason it doesn't. It's like what I was saying about Mrs. America.
Yeah.
Like, why is this not my favorite show? Why is she not my favorite artist?
Right. Something's amiss.
Yeah.
And clearly here it is.
There it is. Yeah.
She don't like you. She don't like us. Whatever, Lana. You're so dumb. Why did you feel the need to say this?
Yeah.
What? Like, do you not have friends? Like, that also, it's like so many levels, right? Because then you know that, like, she showed this to people before she posted it. Yeah. She's a public person.
Right. Mm-hmm.
She doesn't just, like, out of the whim post some shit on Twitter like us, you know, regulars. She had to have shown it to people and they were like, yes,
yeah,
Lana,
right.
You know? So like, who are you surrounding yourself with? Like, bitch, you are so on another fucking planet.
Yeah. Speak on this, Lana.
Yeah. What the fuck are you talking about?
It's so fucking weird.
Yeah.
I really don't see that in general. Like what Megan Fox says, why is it that when you need to make a point, you need to point at other people?
And the wrong people.
The wrong people.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Point at your fucking boyfriend, that cop, that white cop.
They broke up.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah. So when that came out, that was real funny because I guess his daughter didn't find out that they were dating until she saw pictures of them together. And she was like, well, that's my dad.
What a flex. All right.
Lori Loughlin.
Oh, my God.
And Massimo pled guilty.
They finally entered a plea deal. We've been telling you guys, giving you unofficial legal advice on this podcast for free.
If she would have done this months ago, they would have released her.
They would have been over. This would have been hella over.
Oh, God. And then especially with the coronavirus, like they would have just been like, oh, whatever. Just get out. They released Tekashi 6ix9ine.
Yeah. Seriously. This is so, she just dragged this shit on for no fucking reason.
But I hear that the judge is still considering whether or not
he can accept it.
Yeah,
I saw that
because it is kind of a light sentence.
It is. It's 2 like months. 2 months, and she could serve weekends, right?
Yeah,
yeah. So white collar criminals can check in on Friday, check out on Sunday.
Yeah.
So 2 months like that, $150,000 fine,
and he got 5 months. I think.
Yeah,
I think that's his deal.
Community service, I think something like that. Ooh, hope it was worth it. I hope. Could you imagine the pressure that daughter must feel?
Well, she dropped out. I mean, so
you better fucking do fucking something, yeah. Olivia Jade or whatever the fuck your name is.
Yeah.
Because like what your parents are going through.
Right.
Could you imagine that? My mom would throw that shit in my face every day.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I would never be able to live that down. I went to jail for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Oof.
We just got some weed delivered. We ain't smoked that shit, though.
No, not yet. Oh, Joe Biden.
Oh, Joe Biden. They dropped her phone. Joe Biden went on the Breakfast Club. Stop doing this, you guys.
Yeah, don't go on those types of...
Yeah.
Like, you can't handle it. Obama could do stuff like that. And he was very particular about the stuff he did. Like, he did Between Two Ferns.
Yeah.
You know?
Right,
like,
right.
You can't go on the Breakfast Club. You're going to jump into the shade room. You're a presidential candidate.
Well, it's pandering. Yeah. First of all. Second of all, he's 97 years old or however the fuck he is.
Yeah.
But he's... he said... If you don't vote for him, you ain't black.
He said that to Charlamagne the God.
I mean, okay, is it a gaffe? Sure, but I feel like it would have been funny if it was like
anybody else.
Yeah, anybody else.
But this decrepit ass white man saying some shit like that.
I know. Yeah. No. Like if it would have been Obama, I feel like we would have been dying. Like that would have been so funny.
Yeah, or like some, I don't know. It's just not him.
Like literally anyone. Well, maybe not. I was gonna say if it would have been Elizabeth Warren, but no, she's too white.
Yeah. What about Yang? Maybe. He's depending on his delivery. List.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're still mad at you for that other thing you said.
Yeah.
We ain't forget Andrew Yang.
Maybe Pete?
Maybe, yeah. Pete. Oh, yeah. Pete maybe could have got away with it because we'd have been like, he's sassy ass gay guy. Yeah. He's sassy.
Beto?
As long as he didn't use a fucking accent when he. Remember when they did that? It was Beto and who? And Cory Booker.
Oh,
when they started singing ridiculous. Oh, and then the memes were like, when your friend goes to an Italian restaurant and starts saying calamari and bruschetta really crazy.
Bruschetta.
Calamari.
Is Cory Booker still dating Rosario Dawson? I know she got a show out. She got to promote that shit.
Yeah, I don't know. I hope not. That's a boring ass relationship. We don't need that. Hello, everyone. My name is Stephanie.
My name is May. This is
The Drama Club.
Welcome.
This is the podcast about celebrity scandals, gossip, drama, TV, movies.
Everything. Everybody watched The Great. We have officially both endorsed it.
I think. That show's amazing. Yeah. It's on Hulu, streaming now.
Shout out to Elle Fanning.
Yeah, shout out to Elle Fanning.
I'm sorry. Sorry, Dakota.
We should do an episode on her and how you were weirdly obsessed with her.
On Dakota?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I was so obsessed with her. Because I thought she was going to be the next Meryl Streep.
You did. Well, she was amazing.
I mean, she was like 2 years old.
And she was fucking acting better than fucking Ben Affleck has ever acted in his life.
Oh, I am tired of them.
I'm so fucking tired of them. I'm so tired of them. Did I tell you even how well I was like, why are they out? He's like, he doesn't care about celebrities at all.
Why do we have 5,000 photos of them?
With masks on, walking their fucking dogs.
Smoking a cigarette with the mask on.
Yeah. Anna,
ridiculous.
What's your problem?
Did you see his t-shirt that says Se acabó el drama?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I saw you tweet it. That's so wild.
It's embarrassing. It would be embarrassing, I think, if like we were in regular times, but I mean,
now. How did they meet, allegedly?
They're doing a movie together.
They are. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And now I saw him wearing like a baseball shirt that said Havana.
Oh my God. Dude, please stop. Maybe it's a fake relationship.
I'm sure it's a fake relationship.
Oh,
it has to be. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, they're quarantining together, so I bet they're like, you know,
getting
whatever.
It on.
But yeah, it's, I mean, we're all lonely. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it would be a good, I mean, I guess that's a good move for her to be, not for like people that are as aware as us, but like for like the general public to see her with somebody like Ben Affleck. They'd be like, oh, wow. Sure. Okay. Yeah. And it's just good for him to be in a relationship, like a stable relationship.
It's a win-win.
Yeah. Also, like, she's a little spicy. She's just like a dash of spicy.
And he speaks Spanish.
Yeah.
Did not know that.
Yeah. Ooh, their PR people are doing, they're fucking working.
They were like, we need to get you guys dogs.
Yeah. They were like, Ben, we're going to get you a Latina, but not as spicy as J-Lo. She's going to be like a white looking Latina. You know, Cuba? Somebody call Fidel Castro. Can we get a blonde Cuban?
Hello, Cuba. Send some cigars. Cigarettes.
Ana de Armas.
Elizabeth Taylor, touring several European countries, wins attention and praise from the press of Madrid, Spain.
Okay.
Okay, Steph, you're up.
Okay, guys. I'm up this week, and I'm going to do the story of Elizabeth Taylor.
Okay.
For this, I consulted ElizabethTaylor.com, which is an amazing website, by the way.
Okay.
I watched the two-part docuseries, Liz, the Elizabeth Taylor story, which is some 90s, like, Lifetime, like...
Oh, dope.
If you're into, like, those old 90s Lifetime shit, like me, then I would say watch it.
It's on YouTube?
It's on Amazon Prime.
Oh, okay.
But it's not particularly good. It doesn't really go into her life. Like, I knew what was happening because I know her story.
Yeah. Is she interviewed in it?
No. It's a retelling. There's actors. I also, for funsies, rewatched Liz and Dick with Lindsay Lohan.
I'm so bored.
And I read The Guardian's obituary to Elizabeth Taylor, which actually really laid down the foundation for me. So shout out to that. Since we're all quarantined, I thought of a fun game we could play a few different ways.
Okay. Is it a drinking game? Should we pour more gin?
It is. Okay. So if you're trying to be fit, every time Elizabeth gets married, do 10 squats.
Oh.
If you're trying to milk the episode in a few listens, every time she gets married, take a break and come back later. And if you're like me and May and you're trying to be drunk every time she gets married, go ahead and take a drink.
Elizabeth Taylor Todd Fisher Burton Fortinsky.
Hilton.
Oh, where's the Hilton? I can't believe I forgot. One. How could I forget?
For checkout code 10% at all your Hilton hotels, just say shout out Elizabeth Taylor. Okay, so Elizabeth was born in North London in Hampstead to American parents, so she has dual citizenship.
Dope.
Her mom, Sarah, was a former stage actor, and her father, Francis, was an art dealer. Her mother pushed Elizabeth to the stage pretty much since the time she could walk. Mm-hmm. The family moved to Hollywood in 1939 amidst fear of the impending war in Europe, and her father ended up opening an art gallery where... the paintings received hella praise, almost as much as the beauty of his violet-eyed daughter.
Oh.
Yes, Elizabeth Taylor has violet fucking eyes and double fucking eyelashes.
It's crazy.
It is fucking. It is.
Both of those things.
It is so fucking. It's not even. Yeah. That's. Bitch, you fucked up. Girl, fuck you. All I want to say about that. Is pretty much Elizabeth Taylor's the most beautiful woman in the world.
Yeah.
So the family moved to Pasadena and Sarah set up meetings with every film producer in Hollywood for her young daughter as soon as they settled
in. I mean, you gotta do something with those fucking violet ass eyes.
If your daughter's getting attention like that, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cha-ching.
Yeah.
Francis's art gallery had Hollywood clientele, so that helped move everything along for them.
Oh.
At the age of 10, she made her screen debut in There's One Born Every Minute at Universal, where she ended up signing a one-year contract. Mm. But it wasn't until the next year, 1943, when MGM truly launched her career by casting her in Lassie Come Home. This started her decades-long relationship with MGM, where she made most of her films.
Yeah.
Her first contract was 3 months, and then she signed on for the standard 7 years, and then pretty much every 7 years she was signing on for like another fucking seven. Sarah stayed up to date with the latest child roles and took Elizabeth to meet all the producers of all the upcoming films. There was word around town that they needed a young girl to play a starring role as Velvet Brown, who wins the Grand National disguised as a boy in the movie National Velvet.
Oh, that's the thing about the horses?
Yes.
Yeah.
So she immediately pulled Elizabeth up to the studio to show everyone how well she rode. She literally brought this bitch on a horse. She was like, my daughter could do this. Initially, the producer, Pandro Berman, thought Liz was too short, frail, and thin for the part. So Sarah beefed her up, got her rigid riding training, and eventually got him to change his mind.
Okay.
The performance was greatly received in the public and was a huge box office success.
Damn, I always forget that she was a child star.
Because it's so rare that we see child stars pan out their career like that. Yeah. Like Leo.
Right, right.
Like, I forget that he was a child star.
It's true.
Yeah. Because it always goes bad. Like,
right.
Even for the best of them.
Or like, best case scenario, they make their money and they disappear.
Right.
You know?
A la Dakota Fanning, honestly.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. Or the Olsen twins,
mm-hmm.
who I stan. Those bitches are fucking... I don't even smoke cigarettes, but I would smoke a cigarette with them. Okay, so meanwhile, she's going to the Hollywood school and struggling to focus on that because obviously her mind is elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
MGM is controlling most aspects of her life, making her get braces, have teeth pulled, dye her hair, lose weight, gain weight. At one point, they wanted her to change her name to Virginia when she got in her preteens.
Virginia Taylor?
Yeah.
That's generic.
Both of her parents refused.
Yeah.
Thank God. Elizabeth said her days were a strict daily schedule of school, followed by filming, followed by dancing and singing lessons before ending the day practicing the next day's scenes.
Jesus Christ.
And it's crazy. Like 11.
It's crazy how back then you had to be good at everything.
Literally.
Yeah.
You had to be a model, a dancer, a singer, an actress, mm-hmm. like literally everything.
And you couldn't even like, okay, so you had to do all that 12 hours a day. You couldn't even go home and like fucking... smoke weed. You couldn't even just like go kick it with your homegirls because you had to go make appearances,
right?
Like, and then they would be like, "Oh, you have to hang out with that person."
Just a little muppet. Person.
Yeah,
yeah,
ridiculous.
Following the success of National Velvet, she signed her for another 7-year contract with MGM with a $750 a week salary.
That was a lot of money.
That was a lot of money, and for this young girl, yeah. Hell yeah. At 15, MGM started maturing Elizabeth's public image. They had her going to more, quote, normal teenagers and parties. This is exactly mm-hmm. what May's talking about. Mm-hmm. And photo shoots accompanying these, quote, normal outings to show the public.
Oh, yeah. They had, like, look at her at that ice cream parlor.
Yeah, look at Elizabeth at this church social.
Yeah.
They had gossip columnists comparing her to older actresses like Ava Gardner and Lana Turner at the time on their dime.
Yeah.
Because they wanted to age her because otherwise she would just fizzle out.
Right. Ooh, that was smart.
Super smart. She starred in the movie Cynthia, then Life with Father and supporting roles in the musical A Date with Judge and Julia Misbehaves. Mm-hmm. Her last adolescent roles was, of course, as Amy March in Little Women.
Oh, yeah.
Which was a huge box office success. That same year, at age 17, she had a photo spread in Life magazine to promote her birthday, quote, becoming a woman.
Oh, she was 18?
She was turning 17.
Okay.
And her new...
That's creepy.
It's so creepy, May. And her new role in the upcoming film Conspirator.
Okay.
Which was seen as her first adult role. Mm. The press caught wind that she was struggling with her studies, and she said, quote, how can I focus when Robert Taylor keeps sticking his tongue down my throat?
Oh. Okay.
Around this time, our favorite recluse, Howard Hughes,
uh-huh.
became obsessed and smitten with the young starlet.
How old was he?
I don't know. Hella inappropriate.
How long were his nails? He looks like me right now in quarantine. His nails are all long.
Milk bottles everywhere full of piss. He's like, her, that's who I want to marry. He had his lawyer send Sarah, her mom, $1 million plus a contract offering more money.
Worth it.
To marry Elizabeth.
Did she send her?
My mom would have. She said, bitch, you're going. I went to jail for you. Marry this old man.
Something old or the piss bottle, something new.
The rubies.
So they borrowed his nails.
So her parents totally didn't pressure her or anything. They were just like, what the fuck? Yeah, you know, like it became like a media sensation because like the word spread that Howard Hughes has done this.
Sure.
And she was like, whatever. No, like she laughed about it. And at the time, she had just met a 23-year-old hotel chain heir by the name of Connie Hilton at a party at the Church of Good Shepherd in Beverly Hills.
A party?
Yes, quote party. And those two quickly became involved and then engaged.
Interesting.
In May 1950, she and Connie Hilton wed in a highly publicized ceremony. And then her film, The Big Hangover, released the same month. Their wedding was organized and paid for by MGM.
There you go.
And they used it as part of the publicity for her next film, Vincent Minnelli's comedy, Father of the Bride.
Yeah. And that was a fucking bop.
It was the fucking boppityest bop of all time. Am I saying his name right?
Vincent Minnelli?
Yeah, right? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Fucking, that's crazy. I don't know if it's
Vicente. Isn't that fucking crazy? Her whole life is fake.
Yeah. Oh, God. And then, you know, Connie Hilton was like,
hell yeah,
milking that shit too. He was like, oh, yeah.
That's exactly what he wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah. And his parents, I'm sure they were like, hell yeah, right, marry Elizabeth Taylor. Sure. So Father of the Bride was fucking gigantic. Mm-hmm. It was followed by a super successful sequel, Father's Little Dividend, 10 months later.
Yeah.
Which also fucking crazy to me how they were pumping out movie after movie back in the day.
It's true. Because you have this person on contract. So it's like,
okay, get if you to work.
Do, yeah. If you want to do 7 movies, like we're going to do 7 fucking movies.
Yeah. Like the day Father of the Bride came out and it was a success, they had her in the fucking studio reading for the sequel.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy.
So I like Father of the Bride, these movies with Spencer Tracy, but I also like the new ones with Diane Keaton and Steve Martin.
Yes.
Yeah. Those are so sweet and
I
cute.
Love the Steve Martin movies. Yes. That's what I was going to say. That's why I know it. Like it's so huge, right? Yeah. I always think of like when I see a house like that, oh, there's the Father of the Bride house.
Yeah, me too.
Cause so like, love it. Okay, so Connie and Elizabeth were pictured in the media as like living out this fairy tale romance because they were both young, super rich, mm-hmm. and super attractive.
Yeah, it made sense. I mean,
for sure. Like cookie cutter, like on paper, shit looks good. But Till Death Do Us Part turned out to be 8 months total.
All right.
She said that as soon as they got married, she realized, holy shit, she'd made a huge mm-hmm. mistake. He was an abusive drunk and they had basically nothing in common. Yeah. They just had like a super whirlwind romance and she was caught up in like the idea of him.
Right. I mean, I get it. The money, the power.
And remember, she's like 19.
You're like, oh, a Hilton.
Yeah, for sure. How glamorous.
Right.
She testified at their divorce proceedings that he basically ignored her during their entire European honeymoon, drank heavily, and abused her verbally in public.
Ugh. You can't even keep it together for your fucking honeymoon.
Can you believe that?
Yeah.
Her next film, George Stevens' A Place in the Sun, a fucking bop, mm-hmm. was critically acclaimed, including her performance for the first time since she was a kid, basically.
Yeah.
It was like her first adult role where they were like, oh shit, she could act. Elizabeth said this was the first film she had ever done where she was actually called on to act rather than just be like a young girl like herself, basically. Right. Montgomery Clift famously said, quote, Elizabeth is the only woman I have ever met who turns me on.
Oh, my God. Do you have anything else on Montgomery Clift?
I wrote down he deserves an episode.
Yeah.
Or at least a mini.
Yeah.
Because so just between him and Elizabeth, they became super duper close.
Yeah.
And Clift was in a near fatal car accident where she was like the first person on scene mm-hmm. to like fucking get him help and everything. And so she stood by his side. I don't want to get into him too much, but like throughout his life and they were always great friends after this role.
Yeah. She seems like the best friend.
An amazing friend.
Yeah.
She does seem like just obviously she has her faults, mm-hmm. but to me, like Elizabeth seems like a really great person. Like she wants to help if she can.
For sure.
And she wants to be there for people and she sees the good in people, I think.
Yeah.
So I really do applaud her for that and love her for that.
Like I think that if you were friends with her, she would do anything for you, drop everything for you. And it's just like,
But then you turn around and you think of Debbie.
Yeah, I know.
Like, how could you do that? Like, I don't know. Like, she's so complicated, yeah. You know? Okay, so around this time, Elizabeth started up an affair with director Stanley Donen. Mm-hmm. MGM sent her to England to play the role of Rebecca in Ivanhoe as a means of breaking up that affair because they were like, this is going to be bad press, girl.
Okay.
Because he was married.
Yeah.
But Lizzie was still hot and young, so no big deal. While she was out there, she met British actor Michael Wilding.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Did you mention him in your list?
I think I did, okay, yeah.
I don't remember now.
Yeah.
I forget. So many. So Michael was 20 years older than Liz. Liz said that at the time, in the beginning, she found their age gap appealing as he was just like, he was more put together. He was mm-hmm. calmer. He was really secure in who he was. And she was looking for that kind of security in a relationship following the disaster with Connie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure.
So they got down. He proposed and they were married in 1952 at the London Registry Office. So total low key wedding. Yeah. Total stark contrast and from
that's exactly what you would do if MGM produced your first wedding.
Right. They had two sons, Michael and Christopher, in 1953 and 1955. By 1956, her marriage was pretty much on the rocks and she was only 24 years old and she was one of the most sought after actresses in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. This was all cemented when she was cast in the massive movie George Stevens' Giant. Alongside Rock Hudson and James Dean. Now we have three of Hollywood's biggest names on a movie together.
Right.
Which led to drama, to say the least. I rewatched this movie in its entirety.
It's like 3.5 hours.
Yeah. It's like Gone with the Wind where you need a whole ass day.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah. Right? The sets and stuff. Yeah.
It's so good. She's bomb.
Yeah.
James Dean is bomb when he's poor. So like I said, by now her marriage was already rocky. Mm-hmm. So during filming, she was drinking a shit ton and hanging out with Rock Hudson a lot.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
And that led to tensions between Michael and her. But so there was also this rumor back home that Michael was having strippers come over and she didn't really give a shit.
Yeah. Why would she?
She didn't give a shit, but it was like all over the press, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's life. What I would care about.
Yeah. She later confessed that she totally was attracted to Hudson and that she totally would have slept with him, mm-hmm. except that, spoiler alert, he's gay.
Yeah.
She also became super close to James at the same time. And so that created this kind of like rift between James and Rock for her attention.
Oh, yeah.
And then later on, James and Rock moved in for a little bit, but that's another drama for another day.
Oh, that set must have been so fun
and amazing.
Like, yeah.
To have all three of them. But I heard that it was drama because like Rock would get jealous that because James's character is actually very minimal in mm-hmm. the entire movie, but it's important. So he says that like every time that James had a scene that he would like try to fucking like take over, you know?
Yeah.
Or whatever. So right. There's like three huge personalities. Like imagine.
Yeah, for sure. And James is like young and he's an actor,
yeah,
you know,
and James is coming off of like I think after like before Giant he had done Rebel Without mm-hmm. a Cause, so he's just coming off that shit.
Yeah,
imagine.
Yeah, so he's like doing his thing and then I mean it's three different styles,
right,
of acting all coming together at the same time and it's like,
ooh, I would not want to be that director. Fuck that. So Liz and Michael end up breaking up for good and agreed on an amicable divorce. She said in the end, the age gap actually was the biggest problem in their marriage. But ironically, the next man in her life was 5 years older than him.
Oh, okay.
I feel kind of bad for the end of like her marriage with Michael Wilding to me just seems like the most real marriage. Like mm-hmm. it seems like very calm and like I think she was looking for passion that wasn't going to get that from him.
Right.
And it just kind of like fizzled. They didn't have like a huge disagreement or mm-hmm. they weren't known as like a couple that fought all the time or anything like that. So I think it's just like it kind of just ended like she was looking for something more.
And you know what? I think that back then you had that pressure where you were with someone you had to get married. It's like maybe this could have been a relationship that could have
taken its like whatever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like done its thing and then you would have moved on or whatever.
But you didn't see back then people who were like dating for 6 years.
Yeah, exactly. So in comes Mike Todd, theater and film producer, best known for his production of Around the World in 80 Days. They were married in Acapulco with Mike's best friend Eddie Fisher as his best man and his wife Debbie Reynolds as the matron of honor.
Okay, so I'm not going to go into the drama between Debbie Reynolds, Eddie Fisher, and Elizabeth Taylor because our girl All the Way May has already broken it down in one of our very early episodes all about Kobe Bryant and this specific drama.
Is this like episode 2?
It's not. So we had done this and then we scrapped it.
Oh, that's right.
And then we did it the day that we
Felipe.
Yep, that we were on Felipe Esparza's podcast. So it is a 2018 episode though.
Wow, okay.
But yeah, just look it up. It's Kobe Bryant and Debbie Reynolds, Eddie Fisher, Elizabeth Taylor.
Go and listen to us on Felipe Esparza's podcast. I haven't listened to that since back then.
No, but it's on YouTube too. And I think it's cute because you could actually see us.
Yeah. Okay, fun.
But yeah, if you want to give it like a quick synopsis of what happened.
Oh, I wasn't prepared. Okay, let me go. So Elizabeth, like you said, Mike Todd and Eddie Fisher were best friends. Eddie Fisher was the best man at the wedding, witnessed by Cantinflas.
Yeah, because right? It was his place in Acapulco, right?
Yeah, yeah. That's because Mike Todd produced Around the World in 80 Days. So those four together as a couple, Debbie Reynolds, Liz, Mike, and Eddie were homies,
like inseparable.
I don't think we have an equivalent now of like
two famous couples like that.
No. Yeah, because you would think, let's say like a Ben Affleck, Matt Damon, like they're super close,
but
you would
they see, never like, were, huh?
No,
that's
never
true. I wonder what that's about.
We just don't see couples that are close like that
yeah,
anymore.
Yeah.
Anyway,
so after 7 months of marriage, Mike's private plane crashed,
R.I.P.,
in a storm near Albuquerque, and he died immediately.
Ooh.
Elizabeth allegedly screamed so loud upon hearing the crash that neighbors down the street heard, and they had to drug her from taking her own life.
Oh, God.
Because she was set to be on that plane, but she had the flu.
That's right, yeah.
So she was like, I'm not going to go with you. I'm not going to go with you.
Yeah.
So she went into seclusion following his death, but then gradually came out and finished filming Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, where she gave one of her best performances
as absolutely
this sexually frustrated Maggie. Yeah.
Yeah, Maggie the cat. That's probably my favorite performance of hers.
So this is funny because I've seen Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, but fuck, who knows when. Mm-hmm. And like Giant also, when I was doing this, I was like, I forgot about that movie. And I was like, I got to watch that. I think I watched these when I was little. Watching Giant again now was so amazing to me that I was like, I got to watch Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
Yeah.
And I haven't gotten to it, but I want to because I remember sweet. Like, she's just amazing.
She's amazing from beginning to end. She like becomes Maggie and it's so good.
This film gained a huge following due to the gossip surrounding an alleged affair she was having with her friend Debbie Fisher's man's Eddie Fisher.
Yeah.
Debbie Reynolds' man, mm-hmm, Eddie Fisher. Mm-hmm. And in 1959, Elizabeth married for the fourth time to her best friend's husband, Eddie Fisher, at a synagogue in Las Vegas.
So if you remember, Eddie was he was Mike's best friend, so he went and comforted her. And then
yeah, like if I died and you went and comforted no, listen, no, it's not that way.
It's yes, it's that way. It's that.
No, because if I died, I would be gone. Like, there's nobody to be rifted. But Debbie Reynolds existed, oh, and she was rifted.
Yeah.
So let's see. Yeah, yeah, so how is it?
Yeah.
It's like if, how is it? It's like if Joel died, and you were married to his best friend, and he comforted me, and then I got with him, or something like that. Because you would have been rifted.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Right? Like, there has to be somebody surviving who's Debbie Reynolds.
Yeah, yeah, there has to be a Debbie.
Yeah, because if I die and then you get together, that happens all the time, actually.
No, but that's fucking weird.
That is weird, but I do get it. Like
the Joel, like, I think of Joel as, like, my brother.
Right, like, there had to have been something there before.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand, like, who's going to know what it feels like other than...
I know.
Yeah.
It's just, it's just so complicated and weird. But that's your homegirl. Like, what?
How could you even do that to the memory of her?
Yeah.
Like, you still would not cross that line.
Right.
That's what I think. I don't know.
Why people?
Ooh. So anyway, so
yeah, and also watch. I think I talk about this in this episode, but watch Carrie Fisher's one woman show, Wishful Drinking, where she breaks it all down.
Right,
it's amazing. It's on HBO Go, I think.
Could you? I hate watching one person shows, mostly one women shows, mm-hmm. because I get so mad. Like, you should not be this talented. This is
right. Girl, yeah.
Like homegirls Phoebe Bridges,
yeah, Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
Yeah, I was like, fuck you. Yeah. By the way, I started trying to watch the HBO Run. Show Run. It felt super flat for me, and I like didn't even go back to it. I was like, oh, whatever.
I'm on episode 3.
Oh, you then, are?
Yeah,
I watched 1.5 episodes.
I will say it gets better.
It's picking up.
Yeah, it's picking up.
And I like that white girl, the main girl.
I love her. Yeah, Merritt Weaver.
Yeah, so she was in Marriage Story, but she was also used to be a New Girl, and she was great.
She used to be on Nurse Jackie.
Oh, I forgot about that show.
That's when she won, I think she won an Emmy for Nurse Jackie. And then she was also, did you see that thing with Toni Collette where she was it was like a buddy cop thing, but it was a drama. Oh my God, you need to,
text it to me.
Yeah, I'll text it to you later. Anyway, it's about like a girl who gets raped and no one believes her.
Oh God.
And they play the cops that investigate it.
Oh hell yeah.
So Toni Collette and her, Merritt Weaver, it's so good.
Wow.
It's on Netflix.
Okay. Yeah, so your girl Elizabeth.
This is what I'm talking about.
Like, yeah, like this is so stark contrast to like everything that she appears to be.
Right.
So this became the biggest story in all of Hollywood and in the press, and Taylor was painted around town as a home wrecker because sorry not sorry she was.
It's as if my man's died and Howell came to comfort me.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh. Ew.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay, go on.
Yeah, like if Howell died and your man's came to comfort me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Yeah, that's just fucked up. So Elizabeth went to London for some time to complete Suddenly Last Summer. Poor Howell. He had nothing to do with this podcast. We drag him constantly. I don't remember what episode I put on while you sent it to me that it was done. And I was like, oh, I got to listen to this when we were driving. And I like in the episode, I was like, I don't care that I'm married. I don't know what guy we were talking about. And I was like, everybody would risk it all for him or some shit.
Was it Keanu?
No, it wasn't Keanu, I wish. He would understand that. He also understood whoever I was talking about. He'd be like, I get it. He was like, I get it. Like with Leo, every time I start talking about Leonardo DiCaprio, he's like, I get it. I want to be with him too.
Who is his Leo?
He likes weird, like not weird, but like not who I would expect. Like Rachel Weisz is his like.
Well, she's, I mean.
Amazing.
Yeah.
But she's not like who you would think. I don't know. But yeah,
that's who I would think. But also, I'm like a straight woman. But that's like who I would fantasize as a straight woman. That's who I fantasize about.
Somebody on that level.
Yeah,
yeah. Because yeah, her sexuality is more than skin.
Level. So I don't know if men appreciate her the same way. That's
what I'm saying. And yeah. I consider her well to not get that, but apparently he does. Okay, sorry. So she went to London for some time to complete Suddenly Last Summer. When producer Walter Wanger offered her the title role in Cleopatra,
yeah,
she had just finished her latest MGM contract. So to do the role for Fox, jokingly, she said she'd have to do it for a mill against 10% of the gross profits.
Girl.
Fox agreed. She said it as a fucking joke, okay? Yeah. Like, she was laughing.
Because that shit was ridiculous.
Yes. This made her the highest paid performer for a single film in the history of Hollywood. Okay, so also they shot the film in Todd AO, which was a widescreen format that she had inherited the rights from Mike Todd.
What?
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
That's crazy.
I know. Filming started at Pinewood Studios and Elizabeth first came down with a cold, then a fever.
Yeah.
Then she had an infected tooth. She was rushed to a London clinic with a lung congestion issue in March 1961.
Coronavirus.
And she was given a tracheotomy that helped her finally start breathing. She fell into a coma.
God, yeah.
And finally made a rare recovery. in the spring
she
of
has
that
bad luck, I mean, health wise.
Like, yeah, definitely.
It's like one thing after another.
Well, all these starlets do though. Yeah. But why? I mean, I wonder why. Mm. It couldn't be all that rigorous shit you guys put them through for like their first fucking 15 years of their life.
Yeah, and the drugs.
And, yeah.
Fucking, yeah. I just read a biography on Cleopatra.
Oh, interesting.
Because I always hear, like, I think of Cleopatra as Elizabeth Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like something tells me that's wrong, but actually, it's probably right. Cleopatra was like Macedonian and Greek, so it's like she probably did look more like Elizabeth Taylor than
what we consider like Egyptian.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. In the spring of that year, she won her first Oscar for her portrayal of a high-class sex worker in Butterfield 8.
Ooh.
Almost overnight, she seemed to have gained back the love of the public after her fallout from the breakup of the Reynolds-Fisher marriage.
Oh, that's true. People didn't fuck with that.
Yeah, they were real mad at her. So back to Cleopatra. The project was just a complete disaster at first. So then they picked up again and they were like, we're going to move filming to Rome. And now we're casting Richard Burton as Mark Antony.
Ooh.
So shit had already been a nightmare for this fucking movie, but then shit really hit the fan by scandal when news broke that Elizabeth was allegedly having an affair with Richard Burton mm-hmm. while still married to Eddie Fisher.
Oh, Eddie. Eddie, you played yourself.
Eddie's an idiot.
Yeah.
Burton was also married, but that didn't stop him from meeting up with Elizabeth in her villa in the evenings.
I mean, honestly, how can you resist Elizabeth Taylor?
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, same. That's like if Joel was like, yeah, I'm not on Elizabeth Taylor. Yeah. I'd be like, yeah
good.
I would have to. Okay, so Eddie was around, by the way, and Elizabeth was so fucking over that fool. Allegedly once, like, he was starting to play the piano at a party and everything, and she was like, Eddie, shut up.
Well, he's a rebound.
Yeah. Elizabeth and Taylor fell madly in love with another.
Wait,
with one
Elizabeth and Taylor.
Oh, sorry. Elizabeth and Richard fell madly in love with one another, running off to cheap one-room apartments on the beach, taking every moment they could to be alone. They finally went out publicly in the Via Veneto, and pictures of them together hit the public mainstream. The Vatican famously said that their relationship was an insult to the nobility of hearth.
What? The Pope was listening to the drama club.
He was hella mad. He was shook. There was mad drama surrounding this affair. It was like the biggest scandal that they were both out there literally not giving a fuck that they were each married.
They must have had like, they must have been so in love. They must have had the best sex.
It must have been something like incredible for mm-hmm. them to like do this to themselves, especially Elizabeth, because she had already gone through mm-hmm. the dirt just to be yeah. with Eddie.
Yeah.
And now it's like, you're going to do this to yourself again and on another level for this other dude.
And they were at this crazy location.
Yeah.
And work was hard because that movie was like
a fucking disaster. Yeah. Filming on Cleopatra finally ended in 1962 with the film costing $62 million to produce.
In that time.
Oh, making it the most expensive film at the time. It did become an okay box office success in 1963, but it almost drove Fox to bankruptcy and took years to make its production costs back. The film itself had mixed reviews critically, and audiences were super disappointed because people thought Taylor and Burton were going to be really hot and heavy on the screen together, but it was kind of whatever. Like, the whole thing was, it's whatever. Don't watch that.
I just watched the last, like, half hour of it.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, like, a few weeks ago.
Every time I start seeing it, like, sometimes it'll be on, like, TNT or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm like, this is so whack.
Yeah, it's not great. But now that I read that biography of Cleopatra, I feel like, I mean,
oh, you give it another shot now.
No, I think that it's like there's so much we don't know about her, like about like
because Cleopatra has been like, it's like Pocahontas, like she's been dragged down to like a folk's tale. Like people could tell her story in like three lines, mm-hmm. you know, when there's so much more to that character, which they do to women.
Mm-hmm.
So the movie was so bad. Fox even tried suing them for damages, Richard and Elizabeth.
What?
Yeah, because they said that they damaged the film's commercial prospects with their behavior.
By fucking?
Yeah. After it was all said and done, nothing came of the suit, but Elizabeth said that this was probably the lowest point in her career.
Yeah.
So Richard and Elizabeth are continuing their public affair while Eddie Fisher and Sybil Burton were dragging on the divorces for what ended up being 2 years. Sybil finally gave in, famously claiming cruelty and that her husband was, quote, in the constant company of another woman. Mm. And then Eddie soon followed. Richard and Elizabeth were then married in March 1964 by a Unitarian minister at the Ritz-Carlton in Montreal.
What marriage is this?
Oh,
Hilton.
Hilton. Wilding.
Wilding.
Todd. Eddie. Okay. Five.
Okay.
She wore a pale yellow gown and had her hair in this amazing braid with an emerald and diamond brooch that Richard had given her in Rome. Just look at pictures of this fucking wedding. It's amazing. Now that the affair scandal was over, Elizabeth thought the public would stop being so fascinated by them, but it was actually the opposite.
Bitch, you thought.
Yeah. They became the world's most famous couple, and they were almost more famous for the sake of being famous rather than their acting roles, which was the first time people had seen this kind of phenomenon.
Yeah.
They made a whack film together, The Sandpiper, in 1965, which didn't help things. Mm-hmm. And they ended up making 3 films together to not so good reviews early on. And things weren't really looking good for them as actors.
But they were in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Oh, that's coming.
Okay.
The first 3 were whack.
Oh, okay.
People at that time were like, in the movies, they're just like gossipy versions of their own public personas. Like, it was just trash.
Yeah. And no one wants to see that because we're already seeing that faux free.
Like, yeah. And faux real.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they shut the haters up when they were finally cast together on Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, which won Elizabeth her 2nd Oscar and BAFTA. This is the most critically acclaimed performance of her career. Following the success of the film, they played 5 sold-out performances of Dr. Faustus at Oxford University, for which they took no pay, and the proceeds were set to build an Oxford University theater.
Oh, cute. So is there a Burton Taylor theater at Oxford?
Cool. Richard and Elizabeth had this super passionate, wild love for one another. And with that came the constant open fighting, which ended up earning them the nickname the Battling Burtons throughout the 1960s. They made some more movies together, including The Taming of the Shrew, The Comedians, and Boom. They were globe-trotting millionaires who lived this daydream, like, fabulous, lavish lifestyle.
Yachts.
They're totally of, like... Because they're still old Hollywood, but now we're in the 60s.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's just incredible that these people are living this way. But so with that, because now we're in the 60s, there's this more conscious raising youth. And they kind of saw Elizabeth and Richard as like trash, irrelevant old stars. The youths.
I get it. Yeah.
Elizabeth's oldest son, Michael, even left them to live in a commune. For what he said, quote, in order to get away from all her diamonds. And did she have some fucking diamonds? Richard famously gifted Elizabeth the 33-carat Krupp diamond, 1.5 million Cartier diamond set necklace, a heart-shaped diamond pendant for her 40th birthday.
The heart of the ocean?
Yes, which was first given by the Emperor Shah Jahan, a.k.a. the builder of the Taj Mahal, to his first young bride with the inscription, quote, eternal love till death.
Wow.
Imagine that.
Damn. And that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Oh, yeah.
That's just her special shit.
Yeah.
You know,
that's her special shit. She's got everyday shit that he's gifting her for, like, here, Valentine's Day.
What is she wearing to brunch with her homegirls? Because, you know, it's, like, ridiculous.
Meanwhile, their acting careers took very different paths. Elizabeth still gathered praise for her roles like in 1967's GoldenEye. But Richard was by now drinking heavily. He was kind of chubbier. And Elizabeth also gained weight throughout her life, which is something that I actually really love about her. Like she gets thick and then she gets thin and then she gets thick. And like throughout it all, she maintains this sex appeal, which
totally
is astounding for someone like me. But anyway, so Richard's career didn't pan out the way he had hoped. By the early 70s, Taylor's career was in decline. As at this point now, she's in Hollywood's idea of middle-aged. And like I said, she had gained some weight. And their marriage completely broke down while they starred in Divorce His, Divorce Hers. And Richard filed for divorce in 1974. Elizabeth said publicly, quote, there are too many differences. I have tried everything.
They were together for how long that first time?
1964 to 1974, 10 years.
That's pr- pretty good.
That's a good run. Shit. But the couple couldn't stay away from each other. And in 1975, Elizabeth had an x-ray taken of her chest because she was having pain, and she found two spots on her lungs. Richard rushed to be by her side and allegedly held her and like whispered poetry in her ear all night while waiting for the results. In the morning, she was given the news that she did not have cancer, and he was so happy he proposed remarriage.
They really loved each other.
They loved each other. They were married on the banks of a river in Botswana, but it lasted just a few months before they again filed for divorce. Of their love, Liz said that he was basically it for her. She said, quote, "After Richard, the men in my life were there to hold the coat, to open the door. All the men after him were really just company."
How do you make it work with that person that is...
company?
No. With your Richard Burton, like... this is the person that you're meant to be with.
Compromise, but neither of them do.
Yeah.
So it's not going to happen.
I know.
I'm sure they didn't have any problems in the communication aspect. I'm sure they both just said whatever the fuck they felt.
Mm-hmm.
But like one of them needed to take the back role, right? Mm-hmm. And they both wanted to be the star or whatever.
Yeah. And you can't, I mean, in that dynamic, you can't because... okay, she's the most beautiful woman on earth. And then you're also trying to be like the greatest actor.
Right.
So it's like one of you has to
give.
Yeah.
And neither of them would.
Yeah.
In 1976, she became a political wife after she met and married John Warner, former Secretary of the Navy to President Gerald Ford. She campaigned hard, mad hard,
Ford,
to get him elected to Senate. Of this time in her life, she said, quote, "It was so boring. That's why I gained so much weight."
Someone was saying about, I guess Legally Blonde was on last night, so it was trending.
Yeah.
And someone was saying that Warner is an idiot because, I mean, obviously Elle is
so smart
and like a great girl. But like, even if you weren't, like, even if you didn't want Elle romantically anymore, wouldn't she have been the best political wife, like the best?
Yes. But he's an idiot.
Yeah, she would have been perfect for what he wanted to accomplish.
Right. So she went back to acting, this time on Broadway as Regina Giddens in The Little Foxes. Huh. That role also took her to the Palace Theater in London, where she got mixed reviews. Nonetheless, this got her career back up and running after like the political wife stint.
Yeah.
And so she and Warner divorced in 1982. She was like, yeah, I got this shit going again for me, bro. Yeah. I'm done with you. After a stint on General Hospital.
Girl, what?
Taylor.
Oh, fuck you.
Taylor and Burton resurfaced again.
Ooh.
They starred together in Noel Coward's Private Lives in New York at a fee of $7,000 a week each. Oh. Richard then unfortunately passed away in 1984. Elizabeth didn't attend his funeral because she said she didn't want it to become a media circus. He was also married at the time of his death, and I didn't get into it, but his wife was like really adamant about Elizabeth kind of keeping her distance. Obviously, I see that.
When Sonny Bono died.
Right.
It became, I mean, Cher showed up, but like.
It became about her.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like Richard's wife even like bought all the like something like all the gravestones around him because she didn't want Liz to be buried by him. Yeah, it was like a whole fucking thing.
She's in a rough spot, but I mean, if you need to do that, then.
But don't you like get, I mean, like you're comfortable that like that, I don't know how you feel about it, honestly. I don't know, but like wouldn't you want them to be together?
I think it says more about like
her.
Yes, about what you feel about your own relationship with him, that you need to take this step, like even in death, to keep them apart.
You're not going
to
be what they were.
Yeah.
So be happy with what you are, you know, and like be cool with that.
Because also, if they wanted to be together, they would have been together.
Right. Clearly, the shit didn't work out twice.
Yeah.
Yeah. 6 months after the death of Richard Burton, Michael Jackson came into the life of Elizabeth. Allegedly, Michael really, really, really wanted to meet her and make a connection. So he invited her to see one of the final dates on his victory tour in LA.
Oh, but, 80s?
Yes. But Elizabeth didn't like the view from the box he had gotten her. So she was like, never mind. And she left the show early. And then Michael called her to apologize.
Oh my God.
Imagine that.
Yeah.
Imagine you invite some bitch to your show for free and she leaves and you apologize to her.
I'm so sorry.
After that, the two began talking on the phone almost every day and became almost obsessed with one another. Mm-hmm. So much so that at one point, Michael's family set up therapy because they were offended with this obsession he had with her and that he didn't seem to care to spend time with any of them anymore.
Weird.
They were both super high maintenance and they were both kind of like public items. I don't know. What is that? Commodities almost even?
Yeah. I get it.
Because I get it too.
They were both child stars that became the pinnacle of what you could do in either industry,
yeah,
in acting and in music. So it's like they understood each other on a whole different level.
They have these public lives that are tailored.
Yeah.
In a way. I mean, mm-hmm. Michael, but
yeah.
Michael loved being at Elizabeth's beck and call and made sure that she was super comfortable anytime he was around. And she fucking loved that kind of attention.
Yeah.
He literally courted her. He gave her extravagant diamond gifts, including a 17-carat diamond ring, ruby-encrusted watches, diamond bracelets. The list goes on. I think about that for Michael, too. Like, he's a man that could treat a woman that way. But for him, it's like, what woman would be worthy of that?
Yeah.
Like, because every girl right. that he meets, you know she likes him for, like, who he mm-hmm. is, not really, like, who he is.
Yeah,
you know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
So like that must be so freeing to like mm-hmm. finally be able to do that to somebody.
Yeah. And also another thing, it's like it's not sexual, and I think that it must feel a relief to be able to court a woman like that and know that it's not sexual.
Right, because obviously he had problems there.
Yeah.
He once gave her this extravagant diamond necklace, but unfortunately he forgot to pay for it.
Oh.
And so Elizabeth had to give it back, and she was allegedly really pissed off after that, and they didn't talk for a little bit. Elizabeth was the one that influenced Michael to move out of his family home and in 1987 buy the 26-acre ranch, which became known as Neverland.
Interesting.
He named one of the best suites in his house after her, the Elizabeth Taylor suite.
Yeah, cute.
In the mid-1980s, she kept on going with mostly TV portrayals and movies like that, TV films. In 1985, she received the Cecil B. DeMille Award and the Chaplin Award of the Film Society of Lincoln Center. In 1983, she did her first stint at the Betty Ford Center for Alcoholism. In the late 1980s and early 90s, Elizabeth became the first celebrity to participate in HIV and AIDS activism. She said that she had become frustrated with how little was being done to combat the illness despite media attention, and she was seeing her own very close friends fall ill, so she decided that with her name, she knew that she could open doors, so she was going to fucking do it.
That's tight.
So she organized the first AIDS fundraiser to benefit the AIDS Project LA in 1984.
Wow.
This was the first time a celebrity had lent their face to this cause. Then, along with Dr. Michael Gottlieb, she founded the National AIDS Research Foundation after her friend Rock Hudson publicly announced that he was dying of the disease, also seemingly confirming his sexual orientation for the first time in his life publicly.
She's a hero, dude.
This foundation merged with Dr. Krim's AIDS Foundation to form AMFAR.
Oh, Jesus.
Or the American yeah. Foundation for AIDS fucking research. And
that's not what the F stands for. No.
I threw that in for the culture. And Elizabeth was instrumental in expanding AMFAR's operations internationally. This yeah. is like fucking insane.
It's insane, guys. Because the president hadn't even said the word AIDS.
Yes, and she created AMFAR. Yeah.
Crazy.
In 1986, Elizabeth testified before the Senate and the House for the Ryan White Care Act, which improves the availability for the care and access of treatment for low-income, uninsured people affected by HIV and AIDS.
Wow.
Famously named after young Ryan White, who famously contracted AIDS through a tainted blood transfusion. I don't know. Maybe we could do an episode on him.
I was about to say, that sounds yeah. like that's an episode.
I know so much about him because he's so important in the
yeah.
AIDS epidemic. Yeah. Like,
He put a face to it being
not a gay disease. Yeah. Elizabeth pushed President Ronald Reagan to fucking acknowledge the disease via public speech, and she talked mad shit about George H.W. and Bill Clinton for the lack of interest in combating the disease. She famously said, "I don't even think George Bush knows how to spell AIDS." And that became international news that she had said that. So she was right. Like, she was like, I know, like, what I say and what I do is going to bring attention to this shit.
Yeah.
Okay, but hold up, because AMFAR's focus is on research funding. And Elizabeth was like, you know what? That's not enough. So she also founded the Elizabeth Taylor AIDS Foundation in 1991 to raise awareness and provide support services for people with HIV/AIDS, for which she covered overhead costs herself.
That's what you fucking do. Like, if you make it, if you become an Elizabeth Taylor, how dare you not do this?
I know. You know? How dare you clap at 8 o'clock for fucking nurse and doctors? Yes. Like,
do find whatever it is that you care about.
Yeah.
And do it. Just go out there and do it.
You have the pull.
Yeah.
You have the money. You'll be fine. I promise. Right. You might have to shop at Food for Less. I'm just kidding.
You'll never have to shop at Food for Less. Nobody wants to shop at Food for Less.
That shit is crazy. Shout out to Food for Less. I'm just fucking with y'all. P.S. Her estate continues to fund ETAF's work and donates 25% of royalties from the use of Elizabeth's image and likeness directly to the foundation.
Wow.
That was in her will.
Every time you buy a bottle of white diamonds?
Yep. She's their biggest fundraiser even after death.
I mean,
that's a queen. Amazing.
That's like, you can only wish to do,
well,
to
continue for fucking Eddie.
I mean, Debbie did. So,
right, so we got to. She also founded the Elizabeth Taylor Medical Center to offer free HIV and AIDS testing, and the Elizabeth Taylor Endowment Fund for UCLA Clinical AIDS Research in Los Angeles.
Wow.
In 2015, her business partner, Kelly Ireland, also claimed that Elizabeth ran an illegal underground network that distributed medications to Americans suffering from HIV/AIDS in the 1980s when the FDA had not yet approved them.
I just got chills. Oh my God.
This is a rumor, and it has been challenged by a lot of people, including her former publicist and AMFAR's VP. But I hope that it's true.
I mean, how many people would know if she was doing that? How many people would know about
She's on some white diamond buyers club shit.
Where is that movie?
In 1991, Elizabeth married Larry Fortensky, a construction worker she met in group therapy while at her second stint at the Betty Ford Clinic. He was 20 years younger than her, and it was pretty much doomed from the start.
Yeah.
She said she re-entered rehab because she had thought that she could be a social drinker, but she also did painkillers, and like, she really wasn't somebody, she needed to be completely sober.
Yeah.
So
imagine meeting, like, do I need to go to rehab to meet?
No, man.
Ben Affleck.
No, you do not. So she and Larry met while at their absolute most vulnerable, and she got married at her longtime friend Michael Jackson's Neverland Ranch. She sold her wedding pictures to People magazine for $1 million, which P.S. used to start her AIDS foundation.
Hey.
But just 5 years later, she was single again.
That's not bad.
It's not bad. And actually, her and Larry remained really close friends for the rest of her life. Mm-hmm. She said that he was always by her side whenever she felt ill or needed anything. Like, he would always come to her. She had brain surgery later on. That's and right, yeah. He was by her side, like, throughout the whole time.
They should have been friends.
Yeah, they didn't need to be together.
Yeah.
In her will, she left him $825,000.
Ooh.
And they had been divorced for over 15 years at that point.
Wow.
Yeah. In 1997, Taylor's health again hit the headlines when she had an operation for a brain tumor, like I said, and she had to shave off all of her hair. She survived because of, quote, her will to live and her millions of fans willing for her to do so, according to her close friend, Michael Jackson.
And her millions of dollars and her millions of diamonds.
Yep. I would live for, I find a fucking will to live for that 33 carat corrupt diamond that Richard Burton gave me. In 2005, she was a vocal supporter of Jackson during his trial on charges of sexually abusing a child. of which he was acquitted. She was constantly talking about how she had spent so many nights at Neverland Ranch and there was nothing abnormal about all of the children being there.
Girl, you think that he's gonna do it around you?
She had him attend her AIDS charity events amidst all the accusations to try to help him get good press.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And after his sudden death in 2009, she said, quote, "My life feels so empty. I don't think anyone knew how much we loved each other."
Oh, my God. Oh, I forgot that she outlives him.
Yeah. And actually, like, ooh, friends and everybody says that she was really hurt and really grieved Michael's death hard.
Because it would have been over 30 years of friendship at that point.
Yeah. And like at this point, she's towards the end of her life and she's struggling with a lot of ailing health.
Yeah.
So like to see him go, I think was like she couldn't take it. She had chronic back pain. She had a couple of bouts of pneumonia. She had that brain tumor.
Yeah.
She was also treated for skin cancer in 2002 and began using a wheelchair full time in 2004. Mm-hmm. She was diagnosed with congestive heart failure in 2004 as well, and she ended up passing away of the illness on March 23rd, 2011 at Cedars-Sinai in Los Angeles. She was buried the very next day at the Forest Lawn Memorial Park in Glendale, allegedly so she could be very close to her best friend Michael, who was also buried there. At her request, the ceremony famously began 15 minutes behind schedule as she wanted to be late for her own funeral. So R.I.P. Elizabeth Taylor, one of the last classic film stars, a style icon, a gay icon, a dame, and the most beautiful girl in the world.
Hey, good job, Steph.
Thank you.
Oh, my God.
I know. What a life, right?
It's crazy.
It's so crazy.
It's crazy to think of an icon like that.
Like that? Yeah. They don't exist.
They don't exist.
Yeah.
And I feel like the icons that do exist like that, they are usually frozen in time. Like it's in a moment, like when we did, like when you did Kurt.
Right.
It's like a moment that we think about these people.
And right. And so then they're gone and it's like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so rare to have an icon live out a full life and see what that looks like.
Right.
And it's inspiring to see like what it could look like at the, not end, but like when okay you've reached that status and now like okay what do I do with this,
right? Because she didn't need to keep making movies, you know, and she wasn't making movies anymore.
Well, don't forget about Flintstones.
That kept coming up because I was googling. I wanted to watch Elizabeth Taylor movies this week and I was like googling or like on Roku searching her name and Flintstones kept coming up and I was like, please stop.
That movie's good. Well, I mean, I saw it when I was a kid.
Yeah,
it was fine,
but I wanted to watch
Cat on a Hot Damn Roof.
Yeah. I don't know, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, and Flintstones kept coming up.
Remember the B-52s were in it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh God. All right, guys. That was this week's episode. Hit us up on Instagram and Twitter at Drama Club Pod, on the website dramaclubpod.com.
On the hotline, 505-539-0556, at our P.O. Box, P.O. Box number 27433, LACA 90027. Leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts.
Please.
And we'll talk to you on Thursday with a brand new Afternoon Delight episode.
Bye.
Bye.
However, whatever with your helmet.